content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from KidSpiritOnline.com. Our first article, Internet Identity, Finding Ourselves in the Modern World. This article is written by Izzy Weitzman. How did you figure out what you liked? There is no process more personal, yet more public, than the construction of an individual's identity. Our identities are connected to those around us and myriad other related or unrelated factors. In some ways, we have complete control over our identities. In others, we have almost no control. Given the intense personal nature of this concept, forming a unified idea for how identity develops is difficult. One of the best large distinctions to make is across generational lines. Generations are defined by the larger context of the world around them. The baby boomers grew up in a post-war, pro-freedom America, while the millennials of the world watched the Twin Towers fall and the housing economy crash before they really found their footing in the world. These large events can be identity-shaping, especially for the youth of their era. My generation, Generation Z, or Zed for our British brethren, has had one of the largest world events in recent times. The booming of technology out of giant rooms and military buildings and into our pockets and our homes. This society-warping change undoubtedly affects more or less everything my generation experiences, whether through the usage of digital alternatives to real-world activities, possible interests usually not available in one's environment, or the ability to discuss and debate various topics with others around the globe. All of this combines to create a notably diverse generational identity. Before we can examine the generational differences in identity development, we must gain a basic understanding of identity development in general. Each person is born into a specific context. This context comes from the lives and values of their immediate family members, the physical surroundings that make up their world, and the influences of various people in their lives, as well as countless other factors that differ from person to person. From there, the person has two main options: accept or oppose their surroundings. This process is sometimes subconscious and other times the subject of intense internal debate, but eventually a conclusion is reached, whether this is an active decision or a decision to ignore a topic. The combination of these thousands of tiny or large decisions and the amount of weight we give to these ideas eventually help us form a cohesive idea about our identities, whether or not we consciously realize it. A good example of this is food. Throughout my life, I have tried thousands of different foods. I have made a decision about my feelings toward everything I have ever eaten, especially accepting or rejecting my surroundings of others enjoying eating something. Over my 16, 17 in June, years of life, these individual decisions have combined into my general food identity. I'm not a fan of cheese, and I am a fan of anything with enough sugar. Now, this food identity helps me make decisions about what to eat and what not to eat. I know to avoid the mozzarella balls and focus on the pastries. I can also make these decisions about food without really thinking too hard most of the time. This is the central idea of identity, the process of figuring things out little by little until I let those little things make decisions for me. In order for a person to incorporate something into their identity, that person needs to have a great deal of experience with that one thing. It needs to be a prominent part of their surroundings or have the potential to become a prominent factor in those surroundings. The digital world provides near-constant access to what could become identity-defining activities. For example, I played a card game at summer camp for a few years called Magic the Gathering. I loved the game and spent countless hours at camp playing with my friends. But when I left camp and returned to elementary and middle school, no one else had heard of this classic card game, so I was unable to play. I played a few games with my sister, but she was unreliable in her playing habits. Finally, I discovered the world of Magic the Gathering on the internet. Now, I read countless articles and have played hundreds of games online against random internet opponents. I have had access to this game and could deepen my understanding and love for the strategy. This is when Magic Player became a facet of my identity, and this could not have happened without the content and connection of the internet filling my surroundings with information. This is one of the most important aspects of the digital world. Because of its wide range and depth of information, anyone can get lost mining their way through content. Our surroundings are now, for all intents and purposes, infinite, and so relatively anything could become part of relatively anyone's identity, regardless of an individual's physical surroundings. One of the digital realm's largest effects on my generation is social media. Social media is an umbrella term for an application that creates a digital network for the purpose of sharing information. Some of the time, this information is related to one's own life. Other times, it is related to one's opinions. Either way, social media provides a large outlet for whatever is going on inside our heads. This affects the identity creation process in that we now have a way of expressing our identities to the world. These vaguely personal posts can seem incredibly simple, even unimportant, but their constant presence becomes a key factor in the affirmation of an individual's identity. For example, say there is a person that posts something along the lines of, "Just watched the new Spider-Man, best Marvel movie of the year." This tells us the new Spider-Man film has made its way into the poster's surroundings and that the poster has accepted it and is now a fan of the new Spider-Man. This, by itself, seems to be a minute part of their identity, as our scenario has not been fully constructed. Now, consider that this same person has released similar posts about other superhero movies for a few years. This tells us our friend here is not just a Spider-Man fan, but a superhero movie fan. Now let's imagine this person posts not only about superhero movies, but about everything. Bagels, promotions, wars. Suddenly, through this social media account, we have a pretty good idea of who our superhero-loving, bagel-hating, recently promoted veteran is. Social media helps an individual take these many different elements of their identity and display them for the world in a single space. This gives the individual a clear sense of their identity as it can be laid out in front of them. While my generation was not the first to experience social media, we have taken the phenomenon to the next level. According to a recent study, 50% of Generation Z members use social media as a news source at least once a day, compared to 44% of millennials and 37% of Generation Xers. Therefore, this medium has an especially pronounced effect on Generation Z. It is clear that through increased access to a wider variety of things and through outlets for active confirmation of those preferences, that my generation approaches the identity definition question a little differently than those who have come before us, because of our increased access to a larger digital world. All of this creates a situation where my generation and future generations are more able to clash with their immediate surroundings and develop a more specific niche for themselves. A central idea of Generation Z is our diversity, and the internet has allowed for a culture of celebrated diversity to emerge. We do different things and have different ideas. Everyone has access to this multitude of options, so forging a trail off the beaten path has become the norm. With this depth of differences, we face the future with determination and power. Our next article, A Ukrainian Sense of Belonging, and this article is written by Nikita Zinoviev. There are so many countries all over the world, and each of them has something unique. We all differ in language, culture, nationality, outlook, climate, territory, and so on. As for me, I belong to the Ukrainians. Cultural identity refers to a person's sense of belonging to a particular culture or group. This process involves learning about customs and accepting traditions, heritage, language, religion, ancestry, aesthetics, thinking patterns, and social structures of a culture. The need to belong refers to a human emotional need to be accepted by members of a group. This may include the need to belong to a peer group at school, to be accepted by coworkers, to be part of an athletic or sports team, or to be a part of a religious group. A sense of belonging involves more than simply being acquainted with other people. It is centered on sharing interests and gaining acceptance, attention, and support from members of the group, along with providing the same attention to other members. Young people who share the same taste in clothing, music, and other interests might seek each other out to form friendships. Ukrainians, as well as other nationalities, often present themselves in a particular way in order to belong to a specific social group. This need to belong also motivates us to participate in social activities, such as clubs, sports teams, religious groups, and community organizations. By belonging to a group or an organization, our people feel as if we are a part of something bigger and more important than ourselves. There are a lot of features which unite Ukrainians into one nation. First, we possess a unique, stylish collection of national clothes that hasn't lost its relevance. Almost every modern Ukrainian tries to decorate their garments with beautiful embroidery, carefully choosing the color and pattern which represent a certain region. Second, our people enjoy having their own field or garden in the most fertile land in the world. We often call our ground golden soil. We are really rich because we can afford a bountiful harvest, the opportunity to live in unity with the world of lush, useful vegetation, and enjoy our fruitful work on earth. Third, Ukrainians are characterized as generous and welcoming hosts. Our guests are always amazed by our cooking skills. Ukrainians enjoy serving their guests with world-famous traditional dishes, such as tasty red borscht, dumplings with cottage cheese, potatoes, mushrooms and cherries, potato pancakes, pickles, cabbage rolls, mlintsi, thin pancakes, and fruit pies. If you are invited to visit a Ukrainian house, even just for tea, you will definitely find a wide range of pastries and delicacies, pies, homemade cakes, candies, cookies, thin pancakes, and more. And what can I say about the holidays, when all close and distant relatives come from everywhere? Ukrainians believe that the more filling dishes decorate the table, the more pleasant and fun it will be to communicate with the whole family. It is true that our nation feeds everybody from the bottom of our hearts. It is even traditional to treat all guests with some food to bring back home. As for me, I feel lucky to be born in Ukraine. My nation is quite unusual, friendly, generous, and peaceful. I enjoy following our customs and traditions, wearing our beautiful clothes, and eating our delicious food. These are the small but pleasant things which make me a Ukrainian. And there is an editor's note at the end of the article. This article was written in February 2022, before the beginning of the Russian invasion. Our next article, A Reflection on Love, written by Satya Shah. There's something everyone must come to realize at some point in their lives, though they might never acknowledge it. Love isn't something you feel in one singular moment. It's a collection of memories from the time you're born to the day you die. Love is imbued in the smallest actions, from the most meaningful ones to the funniest. These actions can range anywhere from giving a gift to truly being there for someone in their time of need to even just laughing with someone. Nobody's life is perfect or easy, but finding these moments of love can help make each day a little bit brighter. Sitting in my room one late COVID-locked-down night, I noticed something. Perched on a shelf above my desk, next to an overturned photo and a piece of art from sixth grade, sits a blue and gold award. I won a Kid Spirit Award in 2020 for my Interfaith Connections piece, To Be Me. While it may not seem like much, this award means so much to me. On that night, I reflected for the first time on the love that surrounds me, and I noticed the impact it has had on how I view the world and the way I interact with people I love. It was a very personal piece that took a lot of self-reflection to write. It fills me with love to know that something I poured my heart into resonated with so many people. I'll be honest, looking back, that piece isn't my favorite of those I've written. But that doesn't change the fact that no matter my feelings now, I still made myself vulnerable and shared part of myself. I hope that people can feel the love I put into that piece and feel inspired to share parts of themselves with the people they care about. The award serves as a physical reminder of what can come from being open with people. Going one step further, I think one of the greatest acts of love, both platonic and romantic, is truly being there and listening to the people who share with you. People often lean on the golden rule to treat others the way you want to be treated, but I always try to push my friends and family to follow the platinum rule to treat others the way they want to be treated. I say this because everybody is different. Some people benefit from talking through their problems, while others simply need someone to be with them and care. Not every person's wants and needs will align, and people tend to forget that. Sometimes people don't need advice. They just need someone to listen. COVID highlighted this in many ways. I don't know how to describe this past year or so in words that everyone hasn't heard time after time, but I know that it affected many people's mental health negatively, including mine. I can't describe exactly how it made me feel to be with the same people in the same place month after month, but I know that neither I nor my emotions had anywhere to go. More anxieties piled up every day about school, friends, family, appearances, and pretty much everything else you can think of. There was no escape, or so I thought, until I opened up to my friends. Not only did they feel the same, but they also gave me so much love just by simply listening to me and helping me see that I wasn't alone. It's these moments that show the power love has over how we interact with the world. Love, however, isn't always deeply personal. Some acts of love are small and hilarious. One thing I'll never forget is the time my dad surprised my mom with a Bollywood poster with her face photoshopped onto it. One of my mom's favorite things to do while ironing clothes is to watch Bollywood movies. Knowing this, my dad spent hours photoshopping her face and other family members' faces onto Bollywood posters as a gift to her. It doesn't seem like much after all, it's just a little gift. But isn't that the point? Love isn't always deep. It can be just spending time doing something to make someone you love happy. Love exists in every moment, and it's up to us to be able to remember that. We should dwell on not only the hard times, but also the good ones. Love can be a grand gesture, but it doesn't need to be. It's a gift in and of itself, and whether you mean to give it or not, there are people who steal your heart simply by being there for you. In my favorite book, All the Bright Places by Jennifer Niven, one of the characters says, "You make me lovely, and it's so lovely to be lovely to the one I love." I think that's something we all feel and something we can't control. When we are around the people we love, we are lovely, they're lovely, the world is lovely, and everything falls into place. And our last article today, can you ever truly know who you are? And this article is written by Mac Fabens. I have a strong dislike for the phrase, know who you are, both because it is used so often and because I think it has a completely different meaning from what it is often used to convey. This phrase is often used in Western movies where a protagonist is lost and goes on a quest or adventure to find out who they are. What this phrase is trying to convey is discovering or accepting one's identity, a completely normal and valid process. However, when people say they know who they are, instead of saying, "I am comfortable with my identity," both the future and past are being neglected. I view being comfortable with your identity as a necessary component of mental stability, and knowing who you are as a fantasy of being able to safely navigate your thoughts and feelings without ever having to question yourself again. Evidently, different people define knowing who you are differently. To me, knowing who you are means that you understand every thought you have and why you have it, all in the present. To know who you are would be to have the ability to predict everything you will do given every situation. This separates the self from your identity, because while your identity is how you live and express yourself in a given moment, the self is everything pertaining to you. This isn't to say thinking about who you are is useless, because you can examine who you once were and who you want to be. Everyone has some long-term thought patterns or habits, and identifying those is a way to make new habits or break old ones that you don't like. You can't know your current self, only your current identity. One idea could be that knowing who you are is a short-term process in which you understand your current identity as well as the idea that your identity can shift over time. Every time you notice a major identity shift, you just have to relearn who you are. My problem with this is that your identity isn't who you are. To get farther into this rabbit hole, being something doesn't even really exist because it implies a fixed state. Most people probably think they know who they are or their true purpose multiple times throughout their life. The simple fact that you can think you know who you are and later disavow that thought is what eliminates the idea of knowing who you are from the table. If you are constantly changing, how can you be something and never change from being that thing? Claiming to know who you are is dangerous because it may lead to thinking you never have to reflect on anything and can write off anything you do as, "That's just who I am." Not having to question yourself may seem like a good thing, Contending with self and identity can be painful and difficult. You may have to do less day-to-day thought and reflection, but then bad habits can't be corrected, and personal growth is out of the question. I find it contradictory that you can only know who you were, and not who you are or who you will be. Because time is always moving forward, you are always moving with it. Even while you sit here trying to think about who you are, personality, tastes, habits, etc., what you just thought of has now become the past, technically a past person. Anything that isn't split-second decision-making is in the past, a past thought of yours. You can dream of who you want to be, or reflect on who you were in the past, but knowing who you are, it's just not technically possible. Even if you could think about every aspect of you in 1 second, the other factors of life make you constantly change. If someone grabs your pencil to write something really quickly without asking, how do you react? The answer probably depends on other things going on in your life or your day. A self, even a week from now, could react the same way or completely different. If you knew who you were, you would subscribe to that choice staying the same forever, because you are the same person who makes the same choices. You would believe that if someone were to take your pencil in endless different scenarios, no matter how you were feeling that day, you would make the same decision because you know who you are. But because you'll always make a different decision, the decisions you do make are just factors of who you are, not definitions. With so many different personal definitions of are or am, there can't be a definitive end to this debate. According to my logic, you can never see the big picture you. I can be someone who likes dogs, and that is one definition of who I am, but there's too much constantly changing for me to know who I am. Using my definition, let's circle back to the question. Can you ever truly know who you are? No, because this implies a constant, fixed state. Knowing who you are means you will never stray from the person that you are and promotes a fixed mindset in which you are devoid of change. Thinking you know who you are promotes a lifestyle where anything that doesn't come naturally is not worth striving for because it isn't who you really are. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.